Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. Tomorrow we'll be at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club for the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. Before we get to John Orrand, our play-by-play call of the day. Penguin fans, cover your ears. It's Kevin Shattenkirk in overtime.
Kuznetsov off with the drop now to Shattenkirk. Going cross ice and picked up by Backstrom. Into the Pittsburgh zone. Shattenkirk with a little bit of room. A wrister, he scores! He scores! Kevin Shattenkirk has scored! It's a winner for Washington in Game 3 on a game winner from Kevin Shattenkirk!
Capitals Radio Network, after the Penguins had tied the game dramatically 6-on-5 in the final 2 minutes without Sidney Crosby, and Sidney Crosby will not be playing in Game 4. It is official he does have a concussion, so he is out of Game 4 tomorrow night. All right, obviously the big story has been ESPN. It's our pleasure to bring in from Sports Business Daily. That would be John Orrand. John, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the show again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, let's get to it here. It's an interesting situation at ESPN because a lot of people actually do not work in Bristol. So how was this handled?
Well, yeah, in fact, most of the people that got let go worked outside of Bristol. So they were probably about 4 or 5 department heads, and they're sitting in their offices, each with an executive from HR, and they picked up, they started just dialing. So what ended up happening, and why it was so surreal last week, is that the people that were getting laid off are all on-air talent. So they're people with a bunch of Twitter followers or a bunch of Facebook followers, and after they would get the call, they would go on and announce it on Twitter or Facebook and sort of take control of the story. And so what you ended up happening was all day it was just this almost never-ending current. It wasn't exactly a wave. It was just a current of people that were just going. It just seemed to go on for, basically like 10 hours during the day. And I even today, I just noticed a couple more trickling out, here and there. Where I'm not sure what was the delay from in there announcing them, but it was a very surreal day in sports media last week.
The sports media landscape has also changed. I mean, there's now FS1, CBS Sportsnet, MLB Network, NHL, NBA, NFL Network, and so forth. What did those other networks do to then drive up salaries within the industry?
Well, so that's how the salaries got up, and it happened back in 2013 when Fox Sports 1 launched. And just before that, there was a TV channel called Versus, and it was owned by NBC, and NBC ended up renaming it to NBC Sports Network. So they were putting a lot of marketing power behind it. Then you had CBS Sports Network. Then you had these are older, but they're still trying to get talent, NFL Network, NBA TV, NHL Network. And so all of a sudden you had a bunch of these upstarts that were coming, and the way for them to grow ratings is to get known on-air talent, and the one network that had the known on-air talent at that point was ESPN. So a lot of people were trying to get them, and ESPN decided we need to keep some of our stars because we can't let our stars go. So we ended up having bidding wars for people who weren't necessarily stars, but ESPN just didn't want Fox Sports 1 to get traction with some of their on-air talent, or they didn't really want NBC Sports Network to get traction. And what ended up happening was you had people like Skip Bayless or Colin Cowherd, two people who ESPN really wanted to keep. And, the bidding for that went into the millions of dollars, and Fox ended up outbidding ESPN for that. And I was thinking, what if ESPN had kept those two? That would have been another, potentially $10 million they would have had to sort of try to clear off the books. So maybe that 100 would end up being 150 or 200 potentially.
Interesting. Now, the next part of the pay equation happens to be rights fees, and some of these rights fees extend into the mid-2020s. I think the next two big ones that come up will be NFL in 21, and then, of course, the Big Ten starts this year, but runs out in 22. What did rights fees do to cause this?
Rights fees definitely caused this as well. It's a combination of things. So you correctly identified the paying the talent more than probably they should have been paid. There's also a general cable industry trend where what they call in the industry cord cutting, where people are no longer paying for cable. And then the third part of it is rights fees. And you know, just in the fall, ESPN and Turner embarked on their multi-billion-dollar NBA deal, and so all of a sudden, like what they had been paying the NBA grew substantially in 1 year, and they have to figure out how to get it. And having to pay for that while they were still in 100 million homes would have been fine, but now all of a sudden they're paying for that, and they're only in 87 million homes, and so that the difference between being in 87 million homes and being 100 million homes is, you know, $1 billion of revenue, and it made it much more difficult to afford.
I believe that you can correct me on this, that the NBA rights went up 186%. Is that close enough?
It's pretty close, but that's also a little bit of a false number. That's the average yearly payment. So if you think of what they were paying at the end of the previous contract and what they're paying for the first year of the first contract, it's not that big of an increase, but it still is a very hefty increase.
Now, ESPN's always had this formula of what you just outlined, the number of subscribers, which have been 100.1, and I want to say it's 86.9 now. Is that correct? Something like that?
I think you're right. It's just under 87 million.
Yeah. And then a combination, of course, of commercials on top of it. So the formula worked perfectly for them for a long period of time. In your opinion, as you've gone through and looked at the trends, what has now? It's the most expensive channel. That's just ESPN. It doesn't include ESPN too. It's the most expensive channel that we pay for. What's caused cord cutting, in your opinion, in all the research you've done?
Well, people cut the cord because your cable bill is now getting too high, and so they decide. And this is mainly happening. We call it cord cutting. There's also something called cord nevers, which is, you know, my son is a cord never. He's not going to ever buy cable. And when I graduated college, first thing I did, probably before I paid for the heat, was to get cable TV in there because it was so new and unique and different. And so they've figured out, you know, I can follow that Washington Capitals game, even though it's on cable. I can follow it on Twitter. I can follow it via NHL.com. There are a million areas that you can follow it where you don't necessarily see the live game. Or somebody could be periscoping it, so you're watching it free through somebody's periscope feed, which isn't as good of an experience. But there are other ways for people to get it. And so, you know, people are doing a cost-benefit analysis. I can tell you personally in my household, I would have cut the cord a decade ago if I wasn't a local sports fan and I didn't feel the. I like to watch, you know, the Baltimore Orioles, and I like to watch the Capitals and Wizards, and so I pay for that. But if I wasn't a fan, I'd be Netflixing and I'd be subscribing to Netflix and binge watching, and you know that's what my wife does. That's what my daughters do, and they're plenty happy doing that.
John, you just brought up, I think, an interesting point during that answer. I asked you about other major sports networks that compete against them. What have the regional networks done to chip into ESPN?
You know, it's funny. The regional networks chip in. I mean, if you look at baseball, you know, they're primarily a local sport. So Sunday Night Baseball, their ratings are tanking recently. I mean, last year I think was the lowest in the history of Sunday Night Baseball. And that's not just ESPN. Fox's national game, too, is doing poorly. But on the RSNs, these local games are doing very well. I think hockey is the same as well. NBA is a bit more national, and the NFL certainly is national as well. But I think that ESPN isn't really... When Fox Sports 1 launched in 2013, I think ESPN viewed Fox Sports 1 and NBC Sports Network and the regional sports networks at this competition. I think that if you were to ask ESPN executives now, they would say that their competition is Hulu and Netflix and some of these other areas that are really drawing people away from the cable system and they're competing for time and viewers with these other outlets like Netflix and Hulu.
John, I've read a number of articles, obviously yours, but a number of other ones, and many have touched on, look, the stance on politics and social issues that you hear on ESPN Now had nothing to do with how things are going there right now. So I want to phrase it to you this way. Has what they've done in those areas helped them and or at minimum maintain people?
So what happened last week at ESPN? I'm going to answer your question, but first it's going to sound like I'm dodging it, so bear with me. But what happened last week at ESPN was a business decision that was based on how much people are paying for rights, and it's based on cord cutting. It has absolutely nothing to do with any kind of perceived political stance at ESPN. However, I do believe that this, I hear it, I see it on Twitter, and I see it when this story hits. People are increasingly irritated by a perceived liberal slant at ESPN. And so, whether that had no effect last week, I don't think it's had an effect yet on advertising, but I can guarantee you that is something that I'm keeping an eye on, because I hear it often enough that I don't see any evidence yet, but it's something that could come to roost eventually.
Yeah, and the reason I asked it the way I did is, I agree. I think this is a complete business decision. You and I have been in this business a long time, and unfortunately we've seen enough that this was about numbers. But the reason I asked it the way I did, does the company perceive that what they're doing in that area is helping them? It's up to them, because it's their decision to go that route.
Yeah, probably the most maligned show you see is that 6 p.m. Sports Center, right, with Jemele Hill hosting it. And I've brought that up with ESPN because it goes left. It caters to African American viewers, and they say advertising for that, the advertisers are falling over themselves to try to get associated with that show. So it may turn off part, but it really energizes another part. So I don't have a good answer to that because I don't know yet. But I can tell you again that that's something that I'm keeping my eye on.
This has been billed, of course, as the, quote, worldwide leader in sports. That's a great moniker to have. As someone who's followed this for a long time, it seems there's been some misjudgments in market, whether it's with talent, competition, rights, and so forth. Are you surprised that these people that are so respected did make misjudgments?
Not necessarily. I think that... I'm not sure about the misjudgments in total. I think that ESPN is dealing with a media environment that every other sports network is dealing with. So okay. I don't think ESPN is necessarily hurt any more than, say, Fox Sports 1 is or NBC Sports Network is. They're all dealing with the same stuff. ESPN is just sort of so much bigger, and so it gets so much more of the focus. But if you look at what ESPN has planned, they're coming out with an over-the-top network with Major League Baseball Advanced Media, where they're going to have some games that they're going to sell directly to the consumer. That's coming out later this year. What they do on their .com and their broadband business, it seems to so far exceed what some of these other networks are doing. So this was, without question, an awful week for ESPN. It's impossible to spin it as good for ESPN. But if ESPN, but if you're buying stock in traditional TV networks or traditional sports TV networks, I would buy it in ESPN because I think that they're really set up for the future to take advantage of it in a way that the other networks aren't.
One final question, John. I'll let you go. Thank you so much for your time. It's greatly appreciated. And it deals with this. Disney is the parent company of ESPN. Is this a case where ESPN is making money, but not to the level Disney wants it to make? In other words, your profits aren't high enough, so you've got to get the margin different, or are they too close to the black-red line?
That welcome to corporate America, right? ESPN's making money, and they're making plenty of money. They're not losing money. They're just making a lot less money than they used to, and their growth rate is not nearly as high as it was, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years ago. And that's something that Disney finds concerning. Disney has been, you know, dependent on ESPN and what ESPN's been bringing in for decades. And now all of a sudden ESPN's, you know, not making the same amount of profit growth as Disney had been expecting. And that's why we are where we are.
I remember with the movie, what Tomorrowland came out, 2 years ago, and it lost $150 million, and a lot of people thought, hey, look, ESPN's going to have to help carry it. But I guess now, since they have Star Wars, Pixar, and Marvel, the movie division has really helped out, and then they've been worried about ESPN, quote, lagging in profits.
Yeah, the worm has turned, and don't forget about the theme parks as well. That's something that Disney's also depending on. So the ESPN's taking a back seat, which is, again, something we haven't seen. I mean, I've been covering this for a couple of decades. I don't think I've ever seen ESPN take a back seat like they have been this year.
Exactly. John, thank you so much. We appreciate the perspective very much.
Hey, thanks for having me. Enjoyed that.
Always great to have him on the show. Wow. Packed a lot of information into the last hour here, people. Really have. Let's be honest about it here. It kind of beats the opening 15 minutes, don't you think, Sean?
I'll take the hit on that one.
You came through, like, huge on these two. I mean, you came through huge. I mean, huge. All right.
It was so funny last night during the rainstorm. I get a text from Coach Neuheisel. I got the power flickering off and on in my house, and I checked the phone, and it was Rick. I thought it was my mother-in-law calling to talk to my wife. No, it was Rick.
I've got to openly ask the question. Does what you've done in the last hour balance out, okay, the opening 15-minute disaster?
No,
it was a disaster.
I think we covered it.
But if people go back to the podcast before they get to these two, they got to endure that. I mean, that set radio back 80 years.
Whoa!
I mean, it's like right when we first started bringing Santa Claus on, right? And Grandpa Hur was on, and it was doing the morning show before then, and then Santa Claus saved the station.
Going back to the 30s here, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm Grandpa Hur from Benton. You came up big the last hour, boy. I'll tell you, that was that's about as enjoyable an hour as at least I've had. The audience may be going, I'm glad you had a good time. I had a blast.
Well, I've already heard
hour.
Back from Rick Neuheisel. He said he enjoyed it very much.
Well, good. Well, we'll get him back on. I don't know if you've ever heard his show with Chris Childers. I've been on Childers' show several times on Sirius. That show is really, really good. Really good. You know, Dan Patrick's great at what he does. These two guys are really great at what they do. And Neuheisel just brings a real-world perspective to it. Childers is right, anyway. I like Chris. Chris got a lot of passion.
Hey, who knows? Maybe Rick will have a song for us by the end of 2018 if we book a few more appearances. You never know. May have the guitar nearby next time we have him on.
If you heard the first 15 minutes with the King of the Cheddar on, I'm sure he'll come up with us. That'd be a country song. Or if you play it backwards, you get your show back. All right. Oh. I just hope that whatever we did in the first 15 minutes today caused more digital media sales. We'll come back more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Imagine getting behind the wheel and looking forward to your journey ahead. If when you turned your car on, it did the same for you. Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury has the full 2017 Lincoln lineup ready to invigorate your driving experience with affordable American luxury. Well-qualified buyers can take advantage of $4,000 cash back and 0% for 72 months on the luxurious 2017 Lincoln Navigator. Or or lease a new 2017 Lincoln MKX all-wheel drive for $363 per month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors Lincoln is your destination for affordable American luxury. Located in Sunbury in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and online at sunburylincoln.com. Financing with Lincoln AFS with approved credit. Lease based on stock number LB738, 10,000 miles per year and $3,900 total due at signing. Zero security deposit, tax and fees extra. Offer ends 5/3/2017.
All right, tomorrow Neil Coulong will join us to talk about the Steeler draft, which the suit has already outlined how much he hated. I mean, it really was, I mean, it felt like we were doing an on-air therapy session. What was that about?
But it was funny. Then he came around and said, yeah, well, really, the first pick and the second pick wasn't all that bad. I mean,
once you talk things out with him and then use logic.
See, he walked into the contradiction again. I told you that. Yeah, remember, he was saying the exact same to me in the hall yesterday. I agree with you, but
I just don't think you should do the show on Jameson, do you? I mean, I just, what? And then also Steve Bortstein tomorrow on the Kentucky Derby, Dick Girardi Friday in the Kentucky Derby, and also Friday we will have on the show Jason LaConfora from CBS Sports. He's the guy that broke the Bill O'Brien to the Texans story. Remember that?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. Boy, what a show we've had today because the guests have been so good. Rick Neuheisel joined us at 3:35 today. And the Joe Paterno story he told at the end, if you go to the podcast, it will be worth every second you listen to it. And John Oran joined us from Sports Business Daily to talk about what happened last week at ESPN. That's what we've done in the last hour. Time now for the sports bozo of the day, and it's bozos. The Red Sox fans last night at Fenway Park, who used racial epithets, including the N-word, a handful of times during the Orioles' 5-2 win over the Red Sox. He also had a bag of peanuts thrown at him near the third base dugout. The Red Sox have apologized and so forth. Not enough. Over the years, several players have admitted to hearing racial taunts, including Carl Crawford, before he signed with the Red Sox. It's interesting because the Red Sox, Major League Baseball, is 6.7% with black players. The Red Sox 25-man roster is actually comprised of 16%. They've got David Price, they've got Mookie Betts, they've got Jackie Bradley Jr., and they've got Chris Young. It's absolutely inexcusable. I think the way I look at everything now is that, to me, this is very individualistic. Very much so. I think that we, as a society, have done a much better job of intolerance toward ignorance. It doesn't mean it's completely wiped out, unfortunately. And because it's not completely wiped out, you have these incidents where you get thousands of people in a ballpark like Fenway. Let's just say last night, 30,000. And of the 30,000, let's just pick a round number, 10 did this. If we really expanded, let's say 20 did it out of thousands. It is the responsibility of the thousands in the ballpark to tell that group of 10 to 20, never again, it's enough. The vast majority of this, if you think the vast majority of this country is racist, you're insane, as far as I'm concerned. The vast majority of this country is not, but there are pockets of ignorant people out there, and it's our responsibility of those who understand that people are people to make sure the ignorant know they're wrong. That's how I view it. And what they did at Fenway Park was wrong. I don't know if you need to put more security up or whatever. I don't know if it was fueled by alcohol. No idea. That's no excuse at all. You do get a little freer in speech when you are plied with beverages. But wrong is wrong. And it's up to all of us who know that to make sure that these smaller pockets out there that create these problems because of their ignorance are told that it's not going to be tolerated by any of us. Okay. All right, so there we go. Sidney Crosby is out of Game 4. Concussion again. I think that's 7 now. I think that's 7. Wow. That is a number. Now, we don't know to what degree the concussion is, but to me, that is a play where Matt Niskanen gets blamed for what happened. He got the 5-minute penalty. I actually think the fault is Alex Ovechkin. I think it's his stick hitting him over the head that caused it. Everyone talks about the collision with Niskanen. I think it's actually the stick where it's a slash by Ovechkin into the ribs and then flies up and then conks him on the head on the follow-through. And I think that's... I would not doubt that that might be how it happened. I mean, they keep talking about the hit by Niskanen, and they say that Ovechkin clipped him. Ovechkin didn't clip him. Ovechkin slashed him in the ribs, and then his stick came up. And you notice, the second Crosby's head gets hit by the stick of Ovechkin, he starts to wobble. And I thought it was a great question last night that Barry Trotz did not like, but it was a great question in the press conference last night. When he's discussing Niskanen, he says, no, he says, you know, he says Crosby got lower and lower. Matt's just there. He's trying to, in his area. Yeah, I know it's a penalty, but it's also a hockey play. Okay. What was the follow-up question, which I thought was a great question last night, was what Ovechkin did a hockey play? And Trotz got really upset about that. And I thought that was an excellent question last night, was what Ovechkin did that started the whole thing. Was that a hockey play? To me, the stick should only be used to play the puck. It should not be used to slap an ankles, get into the midsection. The stick should only, if you want to throw your body in there, throw your body. I'm perfectly fine. Hockey can be a physical game, and the physical part of the game is something all of us who love the game, and I love hockey. That's been a part of it forever, the physical part of the game. But not with the stick. Not with the stick. Everyone wears helmets today. I remember when Teddy Green with the Bruins got hit by Wayne Mackey of the Vancouver Canucks over the head, knocked him out for the whole season. You can't use the stick. To me, you should not be allowed to use the stick for anything except the puck. And that's it. And what Ovechkin did last night, okay? Now, Niskanen's not going to be fined or suspended, and I don't think he should be. Again, I think Niskanen is the guy I look at. He's kind of like in a bad spot. He's in a bad spot. Ovechkin, not saying he hit Crosby in the head deliberately. No, I don't think that, but his stick did hit him in the head. Dick in Milton. Hi, Dick.
Hey, Steve. Real quickly on the Orioles. Do you think any of this was a carryover? Fans are ignorant. Not just Boston fans, but I'm sure there's a lot of Oriole fans that are ignorant also when you get down there. Maybe not at that level. But long story short, you know the incident last week with Machado down in Baltimore. Yeah. Do you think any of this is any carryover from that?
You know, that's a really good question, Dick. That's a really good question. Because the odd thing about it was that Barnes threw, but he threw it behind him. Dick already actually hit him. He threw it behind him.
Yeah.
Right? Remember, Pedroia looked over at Machado and said, "I didn't tell anybody to do that."
It's almost like
the two people that seem to be in the best terms of that whole thing are Machado and Pedroia, and everybody else is upset about it. And did it carry over into last night? Jeez, I don't know. My question would be how many beers were consumed. I mean, that'd be my first question.
I don't know. Did you watch any of the game?
I watched some of it for a while. It was a really good pitcher's duel. I'd say the seventh inning, it finally broke open a little bit.
Did you see the play with Hardy and in the outfield?
Yes.
When they dropped the ball and then the announcer said about, the crowd was pretty small compared to normal, and the fans were yelling, I got it. So neither, both guys stopped running. No, whether that's true or not, but I can understand that might happen if they could hear them.
No question.
Hardy stops the ball, falls in between because Hardy, it looked like Hardy was going to catch the baseball. And I mean, I don't know that. I've never really ever heard that explanation for anybody dropping a baseball because there's a lot of places nobody gets any fans.
Well, yeah, exactly right. I mean, Fenway's actually one of the places that usually draws a really good crowd. Last night, the weather wasn't great. But you would think that if you go to other places in Major League Baseball, Tampa Bay would be a good one. You go down there, and that'd be one place right away, especially in the dome where you could call somebody off.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. I mean, I don't know if that's happened or not. I'm just thinking of last night's game. But it's a good series. The American League East is unbelievable right now with the Yankees and the Orioles. It's really good baseball. I don't know if they're ever going to play anybody else. Baltimore's played the Yankees and Boston and Toronto and Tampa Bay. That's all they played. Well, they played Cincinnati.
Series. That's an interesting point you bring up, Dick, and it's something where they already play, 18 times within the division? Each team, that's 72, and they only play 90 outside the division, and some of that's against the other league.
Yeah, it just seems like they're playing an awful lot against the same teams right now. But
all the time.
Long story short, I don't know. I'm hoping it doesn't carry over for the whole year because it just looks bad for baseball. You know, people tune in to, if you want to tune in to watch a play, you watch a hockey match. I guess.
Right. But Dick, I saw the Machado play, and Machado didn't do anything dirty. He just was late, and there's a big difference between dirty and late. And he wasn't dirty; he was just late, and that happens because you misjudge it.
Well, he sure played well last night. Machado made some unbelievable plays in front of Adam Jones,
sure did.
The Red Sox are scary. They're just not hitting the ball yet the way they could or should.
Right.
Like Kansas City, the guy from Milwaukee had more home runs than Kansas City had already, which is unbelievable.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right, good talking to you. The Orioles are only getting tonight on MLB. If it's not raining, I don't know what the weather's like up there. It might not be very good right now. I don't even know.
Yeah,
with the storm that went by, it might be up in there by now.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll find out tonight.
Yeah, we'll find out at 7. I know I'm going to watch a little bit for a while.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll probably have the cameras in the outfield now.
Yeah, well, after what happened last night, it's certainly going to be a storyline they'll talk about.
You probably didn't see this afterwards. The MLB guys, ESPN, interviewed Machado, but then they talked about Jackie Bradley. He threw a ball from home plate into the center field stands over 400 feet. Can you imagine that?
Well, he is.
Can't hit a ball that far.
He's the best defensive outfielder I've seen the Red Sox have since Fred Lynn.
Oh, what an arm.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
No, yep. Thanks so much.
Bye, Steve. Bye.
See you, Dick. Yeah, he's Jackie Bradley's got a better arm than even Dwight Evans. And I thought Dewey Evans, I think Roberto Clemente probably has the best arm I ever saw. Dwight Evans would probably be in the neighborhood. Jackie Bradley may only be hitting about 215, but, man, he plays defensively like a 900 hitter. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. As we push forward and coming up on the show tomorrow, Steve Bortstein on the Kentucky Derby. And we'll also have tomorrow on the show Neil Coulong on the Steeler draft, which has already been verbally destroyed by the suit. So much suit panic.
Oh, we can't get through an off season without it, right?
Oh, I could.
No difference from the regular season, you know?
I don't know about you, but I could get through it with complete ease. What are you talking about?
I've known the guy now 22 years, so it kind of just part of him. You know? It's like it's part of his aura.
It's who he is. It's who he is. Yeah. I like what the Steelers did. I don't know. I mean, I thought the pick of Connor was terrific. That filled a need because they've got a running back that doesn't get through full seasons for various reasons. Juju Smith-Schuster, I thought, was just a tremendous pick at two. I think he fits the bill as to what they're looking for. And, obviously, I'll talk to Neil about the long snapper part. The suit was not enamored with that pick.
Oh, I had to break the news to him. He had no clue yesterday morning when I told him, did you hear about the sixth round? He's like, no. He's yipping about the first three picks, and it's like, oh, you didn't hear about round six? Have a seat. They took a long snapper.
They did what?
I guess the Patriots took one 2 years ago in the fifth round.
They did.
Another
and
team.
So did Detroit.
Okay, I thought there was a team last year that may have picked one, but I can't remember.
The Detroit
so
Lions
Detroit
did
last
in the
year.
Fifth round.
Okay.
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they took
what was Caldwell thinking? No, just kidding.
Oh, yeah, I can hear Joe now. What are you doing? Nothing. It's all good. Everything's great. I'll tell you, Joe really liked Jim Caldwell. He really did. Liked him a lot. Oh, boy.
So before today, when was the last time someone shared a Joe Paterno story with you that you didn't know about?
That might have been it. There are very few I did not know about. You know, when you've been around somebody for a long time, the odds are you've heard almost all the stories after 32 years. And, boy, I don't know. Maybe it's something a story George told or something. Maybe. Maybe. But I had not heard that story. And it's not like I'd never heard Joe tell Nike stories before. I heard Joe tell Nike stories plenty of times. He told a lot of Nike stories. You know, about going to the... the outings and things like that. It usually is like every March they'd go, you know, once recruiting's over, right before spring football starts. So, no, I'd never heard that story. I mean, he had me on the floor. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I do remember Phil bringing up one at the memorial, too.
Oh, Phil Knight.
Yeah.
Well, that one I'd heard.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd heard that. You ever meet Phil Knight?
Never had the pleasure.
He really is a really nice down-to-earth guy. He really is. Really nice down-to-earth guy. But, it's... you can be really down-to-earth when you got all that money, I'll tell you.
Yeah, Oregon football, yep, they needed a different color this week.
See, Lonzo Ball, remember, of course, yesterday I talked about, like, I could care less if he gets turned down, but I really don't. I mean, real people have real problems in life. I mean, real people have real problems. They say that they want to put out his shoe for $200 a pair.
Good luck with that.
Well, what do the really great Nikes go for? I know that you find it hard to believe that I'm out of touch with such things. But what do, for example, does a LeBron James shoe go for? What does a Jordan shoe go for?
Well, some can go from like $90 up to maybe, you know, $185, depending on what model you get.
Okay.
You know, like an Air Jordan 31 can go for $185 if you buy that directly through Nike.
They say that Lonzo Ball's shoe would be in the $200 tier. Say Kevin Durant's shoe is listed at $220.
Oh. We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.